This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
And according to Adam Schefter from ESPN, he is reporting that sources are telling him the Ravens-Steelers game will now be played on Wednesday night. So push it back 24 hours because apparently we can't get to the game tomorrow, but 24 more hours is going to put everything into perspective and everything's going to be all good.
No, it's not. It's just going to be the same gong show. And what's 24 hours going to do?
I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure. I guess maybe another 24 hours for testing to make sure everyone clears again before you travel, because the Ravens are still in Baltimore, and they've got to get to Pittsburgh, and that game, I guess, is going Wednesday night. The crazy thing is the Ravens are supposed to play on Thursday night against Dallas, and I don't believe they have officially postponed that game, but it obviously goes without saying that'll be the case. But if you're playing Wednesday, can you play Sunday? Or do you have to play against the Cowboys on Monday or Tuesday next week?
Yeah, you're going to have to adjust the whole schedule. You can't just mess with them and push it back to Wednesday and go, oh, by the way, you're still playing next week's game on time. You probably have to at least give them one more day or two more days, don't you think?
I would think so, yeah. So maybe they don't get back onto the usual schedule for a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks down the road. And Lamar Jackson tested positive, so he is not even going to be playing. But if you push back the next game, then maybe he clears and he gets back in time to play Dallas. Who knows? But they need wins, too. Baltimore season is on the brink.
It's hanging in the balance. Yeah,
it's hanging in the balance. Absolutely it is. So more on that in about a half an hour with Marcellus Wiley. And Ray Ferraro will join us here in just a few moments. So Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe were speaking over the weekend. And Dubas had an interesting quote. They got into a number of different things, different tactics. You know, the idea of the Leafs dressing 7 defensemen, 11 forwards like Tampa has in the past. And it sounds like it's something that Keefe is intrigued by and will likely decide to go with at some point this year. But I think the main bit of information that has been consistent basically since the end of last year, all throughout this offseason, has been the approach publicly from Dubas and Keefe directed towards the young core. And I see the young core as 3 players, personally. Like, I think it's Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. I guess you can include Zach Hyman, but Hyman doesn't apply when you're talking about grit and toughness and determination.
Right.
Morgan Riley, maybe. You know, maybe Riley, but I think of him kind of as a more of a veteran type as opposed to a young guy who's still learning the ways of the game. But, I mean, you guys can jump in here if you think there's more than the 3 players
Here. It's the core. I know when he says young core, it's just the core. Tavares, Marner, Matthews, they're all in there. Riley, Freddie Anderson, it's all a core.
It's a core, but Riley's 26 years old.
Yeah, like, Tavares is 31. It's not Joe Thornton isn't like
– right. Like, I think if you're talking young, inexperienced, you might be able to lump Riley in. Although Riley's been kind of a day one-er here.
I know.
You know, because, like, throughout the change, like, he's kind of seen it all. Like, he's the only guy left from...
We don't have to go Joe from the bridge on establishing core or non-core. But I think when you're talking about a professional hockey team, you're talking about the core players. And some of the main pieces of the core happen to be young. There's where the reference comes from. It's the core of the hockey team.
Right. I guess what I'm trying to get to is, you know, the history of these players, the overarching conversation of their negotiations, their contracts. Because Dubas said, quote, on the core group, if they're willing to sacrifice a little bit in each of their own individual realms, as all young teams do and young superstars and players have to go through, then we'll reach our full potential, end quote. So if he's saying that to Tavares, that is an issue because John Tavares has been in the league for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you're telling him, you know, we don't see you sacrifice enough, that's a bit of a problem. And again, Freddie Anderson's a different situation because he's a goalie. I don't think you're talking about Jake Muzzin in this.
No.
You better not be talking about Brody. You just paid him effectively to come in here and solidify the top 4 and I would assume bring these qualities. That's why I'm isolating the 3. And Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, because they're the 3 guys who have been the face of this organization for the better part of 4 or 5 years. And when you think of this team, you think of those kids, drafted, developed, rock stars when they got here.
Yes, and it could mean the extra toe drag, the extra goal, the extra play at the blue line. maybe a puck out, maybe a puck in, maybe a couple battles won on a penalty kill. Maybe that can help establish a W as opposed to trying the other things that are for Pee Wee hockey players. And it's right, those three players that you're referring to. Because John Tavares understands he has to play both ends of the rink, blah, blah, blah. But that's probably what's referring to.
Yeah.
An extra little play here or there that's a little bit out of your comfort zone, which shouldn't be out of anyone's comfort zone, instead of a toe drag here. It's just a couple plays a game.
But you know what I take it as, too, is we always focus, like, a lot of times, and, oh, you can speak to this because you were a goal scorer, you were a point producer. We equate a guy's season on their success, how many points they got, how many goals they got. And I think what Kyle's saying is if Austin Matthews gets 45 goals instead of 55, but they win a cup or they go deep in the playoffs, I'm happy with Austin Matthews if he plays a rounded game. Same thing with Mitch Marner, same thing with William Nylander. Instead of personal stats and just looking to pad them, and I'm not suggesting that's what they're trying to do, it's the whole package because they've got these guys have been paid on long-term deals. It's about success, and success comes with playing a complete game. That's what I got it out of.
Right,
I don't
exactly
care how much they score. I care that they play proper or they score a big goal at the right time for my team. That's what I got out of that.
Yeah, I think so too. But that wouldn't you think that would have been a part of the negotiation? And it wasn't. They paid them based on talent. It's kind of an admission from my standpoint. It was payment based on talent. And they're still hoping that the complete game rounds out here. And they're hoping, I think, for a lot. It's one thing to ask for it out of one guy. Multiple guys, I don't know if the light is going to go on.
Wow.
Here's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Ray, we're talking about these Dubas comments. I don't know if you saw them online.
Yeah,
just about how, you know, if the core group are willing to sacrifice a little bit, then it's going to go a long way. And he said there's so much focus sometimes placed on bringing in one or two players. Reality is that the level of competitiveness and grit and toughness is going to permeate through the locker room. It's going to be through the maturity of the group that's already there. I focus on the three kids who have dominated this market for 3 or 4 years, Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. I think it's directed in large part at them. What do you make of the comments, and do you believe that it's doable to expect all three of them to just change maybe a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit, and do you think the light's going to go on?
Oh, I think it can for sure. I would say if they're unsure whether it can go on, then they've made a catastrophic error.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have already signed these guys to, you know, large, large dollar franchise-changing contracts. And you better, at that point, have been pretty certain about what type of person that you're signing. Not the talent. The talent's obvious for these kids, right? Like, it's... Man, they're phenomenal players.
Mm-hmm.
But you should already know. Here's the thing I don't get. You're already making $10 or $11 million. What the hell does it matter if you score 30 or 40 goals? If you win, you win. You're still getting the $10 or $11 million. When we played, Jamie brought up, you know, Jeff being a goal scorer. When we played, a lot of our salary was tied to our numbers, our bonuses. You bet we wanted to win, but you bet I didn't want 29 goals. I wanted 30.
Right.
Because that was a significant difference in my contract.
Yeah, we weren't getting $15 million on July 1st.
Right. It doesn't mean anything to these guys. Like, it means to their pride, but I mean financially. 29, 30, 31 goals, what the hell's the difference? Doesn't matter. And so if you don't know that already, oh boy, in my mind, you've made an error. Because you should already know that these guys... You can speak to them about giving up a number a little bit for the greater good of the team. And you should already know that they're going to mature into that. You might get one wrong here or there. Who knows? People are not perfect, right? But you should know already that when you go to them, now they're a couple years older. They've been booted to the curb, you know, disappointingly in the playoffs a couple of times now, that they would say, hey, we can do that. We can... Like, they should look at their team and realize how much influence they have on it now. They're not just a young guy on the team. They're a young guy, the best guys, and they're leaders on the team.
Right. And I don't disagree with the sentiment, but my from Dubas, and I think he's what's interesting also is he's basically saying what Babcock said forever, only he's doing it in a much more diplomatic, sensitive way. But, you know, will before skill, all that kind of stuff that some people gloss over, some people roll their eyes on. But clearly Dubas realizes, and Keith, that they need a little bit more. And it is about the whole team. It's not only about these three players, clearly. But we always bring up references of the past 30 years of a player that kind of changed their game. And we bring up a guy like Yzerman or a guy like Medano. But I don't remember it being a story or a situation where three guys on the team had to do it. Like, you know, it's not like in Dallas they were like, all right, Medano, Nieuwendyk, and Hatcher, or and Zubov. You all have to change a little bit. That's my hesitancy here and my concern. I think one or two guys, asking all three, and I'm not here to pick out one or two that won't. I just think probability and history would suggest the idea that all of them do it at the same time is probably unlikely.
Yeah, except if you have two of them doing it and the third guy is like the one of these things is not like the other, chances are he's going to get on board.
Yeah, or with talent alone is still going to chip in a ton, which these guys do. You know, it's not like they're bad players or they're killing the team.
And, Brian, don't you think that Austin Matthews might be getting lumped in there? I thought he's been a monster in the last couple of playoffs, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought he had a great year last year. I think his game is continuing. But he can always get better, right?
No, I know.
But, yes, I agree with you. I think of the other two, he's ahead.
Don't you think, like, he's already if we're in agreement, and I think we probably are, that his game has taken the biggest steps, leaps, and bounds, then – I would say Nylander took a pretty large step last year.
Yep.
Yeah, but he still needed his ass booted in the playoffs, right? How many times you want to boot in the ass?
I don't know. He's been in, what, two playoff series?
Three at least.
He's been here since Washington. That's four or five years. Yeah.
I don't know. I still want him on my team. I think he can be part of what they're talking about. I really don't doubt that. It's whether there's enough of it. I get what you're saying, Brian. I guess I would never understand a player in today's world making the money that they're making that can't find a little sacrifice to try to help the team win, because it doesn't matter. You're getting paid anyway, and when your contract's up, you're still going to get paid. You're that good. I don't know why somebody can't understand it.
Yeah, no, you're preaching to the choir on that. I'm with you, Ray. And what I like about these comments from Dubas and Keefe is that these are the guys that should be propping up the team, right? Like this, yes, Tavares is here and he's the captain and he's got to perform. Like that goes without saying. Freddie Anderson's got to perform. Right? It's a team sport. They all have to pull their weight. And they all clearly have to pull more weight than they have been in the past because they haven't won any playoff rounds. But it's not as if Dubas and Keefe are – shielding these players. Like, in a way, this is also a kind of maturing moment for the organization, where the early years with Matthews and Marner and Nylander, it was protect, protect, protect. As rookies, you can't speak to the media, leave them alone, let them ease in. And Dubas and Keefe are not doing that. They're being delicate with it. They're not being overly forceful. They're not throwing anyone under the bus by name. But I think it is appropriate that the focus remains on Matthews, Marner, and Nylander because they're such good players.
I think it should be. Sorry, let me jump in here quickly, Ray. Like, you know what bothers me out of all this, guys? Is we would attack Mike Babcock for saying this. They're saying the exact same thing, just in a different way.
And basically, they haven't been gritty enough, competitive enough, tough enough. Like, that's what he's saying.
Absolutely. But Sheldon Keefe, how long did it take for him to sound exactly like Mike Babcock?
3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Not long.
I mean,
but he's likable. Babcock wasn't. That's the
you're
difference.
Right. And Sheldon was the shiny new toy on the block, and you're going to give him a pass. But all I'm saying, I'm coming back to if you take personalities and egos out of it, Mike Babcock was hammering that drum for how many years, and that drum has not changed when it comes to these players. O made a great point. I think Matthews turned a corner. I think Nylander is still turning a corner. I think Marner's, they're all fantastic players, but there's something missing, and management is saying, hold on a second here. We paid you. We need you to find that next level.
Right. It's
that,
incumbent that, on you guys to do it.
Exactly.
Like you guys have the ability. We've paid you because you are so talented and you're that good. Like, no one expects these guys to not play well. Like,
no,
that's how good they are. They're going to play well. But
we're not talking
push
about,
through?
Yeah, we're not talking about winning defensive player of the games and doing stupid stuff like blocking shots. Not that that's stupid, but we're just talking about what Braden Point brings. Yeah,
because me and you are thinking this the same way.
Like, we're just talking about what Braden Point brings to the table. When the playoffs start, play well every single game and be a difference maker in the game. Be intense, be on the puck, do good things with the puck, and be a difference maker in the game. He's not Mr. Shot Blocker, but you know what he does? He wins draws, he gets pucks out, he makes great plays, he makes everyone around him better, scores massive goals. That is why he is such a special player. It's not about doing things that are outside of his abilities or that it doesn't, you know,
not capable of doing.
Yeah, yes,
he's not gonna,
exactly.
He's not going to lay out Tom Wilson in a fight.
No, you know? But like, what he is, he's counted on in a big game. Go ahead, Ray.
Sorry, there's also this, too. They've made their statement. That's great. For the first time in a few years, they've tried, or not tried, they've looked like they've addressed their blue line. These guys can be better, and if the blue line sucks, the blue line sucks. You're not going to win. These guys can be doing everything they're supposed to be doing. And if their D stinks, they stink. Or if the goalie stinks, they stink. Mm-hmm. They can't do anything about that. So they've made, I think, some really proactive moves this year to try and improve the depth and the abilities of their blue line. And I mean, we can talk about all the other stuff too, but in the underbelly of it, they just haven't been good enough to hold a 4-1 lead in Boston, to win a playoff series against Washington that was right there. They just weren't good enough. They couldn't hold on. And so if those guys do their part and they sacrifice a little bit and now management is caught up on their part a little bit, then you look at a team that's as good as anybody in Canada for sure. And now they've got a chance to go and climb through whatever this season's going to look like. But it should look a little different if the big boys do what they're asked to do, and the defense does what they're asked to do. Doesn't it look like a little bit more well-rounded team?
Yes, on paper it certainly does. And
that's all we got right now.
That's all we got, and that's all you can project. And you're right, that's the beauty of this sport, and that's what can make this sport so frustrating is that, you know, 17 guys can pull their weight. If that 18th guy doesn't, the you know, house of cards might fall. But I also think this is a group that is highly analytical. I think they put in a lot of work. I think every organization has been taking this time off to do a lot of work. And I'm sure they've got kind of proof of, you know, different plays and big moments where they said, we need a little bit more here and a little bit more there. And I'd be curious to see how they've approached it with the players, because I don't sense that Keefe and Dubas are guys that are going to, you know, throw curveballs through the media at their players. You know, I think they've spoken to all of them and made it abundantly clear what they've seen, what they need, and they've done their part, and now it's on the players to follow through, which is the way it
Brian,
should be.
Brian, there was one thing that really jumped out at me too as well in that, in the article, was, or in the quotes, I guess, was his being Kyle, the view of Kevin Cash in Tampa Bay, that Snell needed to come out.
Right.
Like, by following your principles, like, there is no deviation to that. And I think that's really instructive for us, what we're going to see. Like, all of a sudden, they're not going to change and go down a different lane here.
No.
You know, his point was, you see this right to the end because this is what you believe. And,
yeah.
And I'm, you know, and I get it, you know, but I still would have left Snell out there to face one more batter.
Exactly.
Jays were the same in the first game in Tampa, man. Who pitched?
Shoemaker?
Yeah, it was like, yeah, he was dialed in. It was like,
rolling.
He's coming out.
Yeah, they made up their
mind.
But
I think that's really important to note, that we shouldn't expect that, no matter how this is going, that things are going to change, whether it goes good at the start or bad at the start or whatever. Their view is their view, and in my mind, I kind of admire it, that the view is the view, and this is how they feel it's going to be successful. So they're gonna plow down this road, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Lots of years, I think it's what, 1967. Mm-hmm. Lots of years haven't worked, and so they're going down this path, and they're gonna, you know, they'll either see it to fruition or it's not gonna work.
Yep. No, and that's, they should feel pretty good about their team. Like, there's still a lot of question marks until we all know the team goes out and proves who they are or who they're capable of being. It's just going to be hearsay and projections. But I don't blame Dubas and company for saying, I'm a believer in Austin Matthews and John Tavares and Mitch Marner and William Nylander. I would be too. Like, those are the guys that are, those are the guys that are going to get you there if they're going to get you there. But, you know, you've already paid the money, so they better. Right, you keep circling back to that. You've already invested. They're not on entry level deals.
But
so.
You know, you're right. All along, though, like Ray, you said, not deviating from the plan. But there is some growth there, and what I mean by that is it's not, you're not wrong to adjust along the way. And guys like Simmons being harder to play against. I don't know if Kyle Dubas would have signed Wayne Simmons 2 years ago.
Right.
But now you start to, like, I think there's been some, it's not an admission of, hey, like, that's not working, my plan. But you can tweak your plan. You're allowed to do that. And that's where I think growth of a manager, growth of an organization, you know, Julien Brisebois was a prime example of that. He took his organization in a little bit different way than maybe Stevie Yzerman would have. And he added a couple players that he thought was going to help him win. I see Kyle, a little bit of a deviation, but he's still staying with the plan. But he's not shy to go, I want a little bit more size. I want a little bit more toughness in certain areas to help my core along.
That's where they're at. And, yeah, you're right. You're right. I agree with you, Noodles. And all we got to do is get to the games and actually play to see if this deviation, even though it's slight, works out.
Hey, by the way, before I go, have you already talked about the – boxing on Saturday or no?
I watched
my
two takeaways. Snoop saying that looks like two uncles at a barbecue. Standing. And then the other one was, I don't know if I could have got knocked out any worse than that basketball player.
Nate Robinson just I thought he was going right through the ropes, Ray. Like out of the ring knockout.
That looked like a bunny knockout.
Yeah,
it was
ugly, and I don't think Nate's going to be stepping into the squared circle anytime soon.
Ray, by the way, we saw you golfing on Twitter there. Was the first shot with the new knee an absolute skank ball, like just 1 foot off the ground?
Oh, only you would pull that out. I hit it, I would say, I'm not kidding, I only had a wedge, 30 yards left. I was so scared to get onto my left.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just, like, arm shuffled that thing over there, and I was like, oh, that wasn't very good now, was it?
So it was the left knee that you got replaced.
Yeah, so I gotta have a little faith to get to the left knee still, but it got better.
Wait till you get in a fairway bunker with about 190 yards, a bit of an uphill stance. You'll just skank that thing because your left knee, you'll think, will just buckle in there.
That's right.
I will drill that right into the lip of the bunker.
With a 60-degree wedge, you'll still just skull one.
But, Hazy, you know the rule. You get relief now, remember?
I know. Believe me. I was not aware at one point, but then I made the adjustment on the fly.
Ray, we were playing, and he hit a skank ball from the fairway bunker. And it basically, he drilled it into the lip, and it went 10 feet. And then I said, Brian, you're in a bunker with no rake. You get relief. And he's like, oh, didn't know that one. So he goes, I'll replay the shot.
COVID rules, man.
It was a veteran move.
COVID in 2020. You got it. You got to take advantage.
Now, golf, I would say, is the only sport that I don't want to return to pre-COVID rules.
I'm with you. I love individual carts and leave the pin in and 10 minutes in between
also,
tee times.
You get in the bunker, flatten out your,
it's outstanding.
Like
It's an outstanding rule book, the COVID rules. How many missiles did you hit and it hit the pin and you look at your partner, you're like, am I taking that? It's like, yep,
we
COVID
play
rules.
With a guy. We play with a guy. I'm not kidding you. The ball even touches the lip of the cup. He goes, oh, that hit the noodle.
Yeah.
No, it didn't.
I love it because all that. The guys and one guy looks at the other guys and they go, COVID birdie? And they go, yep,
yeah,
COVID
take
birdie.
It. Jot it down. All right, give me a three. Meanwhile, that thing was going 25 feet past. And
Hazy, I have to admit, I took a COVID birdie on 18 at that goat ranch you took me to.
I saw that.
And because I was a long putt and you were like, man, that was in. It hit the COVID stick. I'm like, I'll take it, birdie.
Yeah, that was a long putt too and you took it. Yeah, no, listen, man, that's the beauty of it. I'm with you on that. Let's continue with these rules well into the future. Anyway, good to see you back out there, buddy, and we'll do this again tomorrow at 5:05.
You betcha. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Experience the low-maintenance cost of driving a self-charging hybrid electric from Maple Toyota. Purchase in-person or online at MapleToyota.com. Make the switch. Drive a hybrid. Got the Brendan Shanahan clip from a couple of years ago about sacrificing before the contract negotiations. We'll revisit that, and I hope that is not necessarily symbolic of what is going to happen in the future here when it comes to the sacrifices Kyle Dubas is looking for. Get to that later this afternoon. Marcellus Wiley on week 12 in the NFL. Catch up with him next. Steelers-Ravens game is going on Wednesday night now. That's what Schefter's reporting. And if Schefter's reporting it, then you can pretty much lock it in. But sources are telling him, so nothing official yet. And it sounds like we might have a bit of a revolt within the locker room down in Baltimore because they have not been able to practice. They have not practiced at any point. And they basically said, the players have said, we're not playing until we get a chance to practice.
I know, but that time's taken away from you. I don't know what they want. It's just, it's gone. So,
well, I guess so. But if they move it to Wednesday, then maybe they can get to Pittsburgh and practice tomorrow to chat about this amongst some other things around the NFL. We're joined now by longtime NFLer from FS1, Marcellus Wiley. What do you make of this Ravens-Steelers situation, all the movement, the idea that the players down in Baltimore may just decide they're not going to play if they don't get a chance to practice? How would you handle this if you're in that Ravens locker room?
Oh, man, if you were in the locker room as an active player, obviously you could feel their frustration because, you know, a few bad apples spoils the bunch. So it's unfortunate. The consequences will be a compromised practice week, if any practice at all. So I would be frustrated because nobody wants to go out there and put on film something that they're not prepared for. And every team you face in the NFL, every player you face in the NFL is a black belt. It's just different degrees of that black belt. And you don't want to go against a team, especially this team, an undefeated team, not fully prepared. But if you're the organization, if you're the NFL, you look at it slightly different. Some of this, in terms of organized confusion and issues, was par for the course. You knew that you were going to run into some hiccups sooner or later, and you would have to plow through it. You would have to almost just run through the stop signs and try to make sure that you give the fans and give your team the best opportunity and the best product. But that said, I think what's going to happen is they're going to have to just play on a shortened week, compromised week, no practice, and just go out there, roll the dice. It's unfortunate because I don't think the scheduling will add up where they can move this game anywhere else without having more issues come from that.
With Marcellus Wiley, the Tom Brady versus Bruce Arians battle continues to heat up, and it feels like people are picking sides throughout the NFL community in terms of who's in the right, who's in the wrong. Arians came out and said, listen, Brady's picking all the plays that we're going to use. We just picked the play in the moment. But he's well aware of the playbook. He's the one that is basically deciding to add a play or delete a play. And Brady was asked about his relationship with Arians a little bit yesterday and gave an answer, professional answer, and then kind of cut it short and took off. Where do you stand on this, and who do you think is going to win the battle in the end? Tom Brady or Bruce Arians?
Man, this is a tough one. I really don't think either one of them are wrong in this situation. I think it's kind of low-hanging fruit to say, oh, Tom Brady has issues with his coach, because that was the same narrative in New England. And once you play for Bill Belichick, all in all reality, no matter who's your coach after that, you're going to have a little less respect and a little less trust for them as a coach, because no coach is greater than Bill Belichick. So that's a tough thing for Tom Brady because of his muscle memory. Like, his muscle memory is of success, of a dynasty, and of a coach that no one was better prepared. But when you look at all that in totality, if you're Tom Brady, you might have some trust issues. You hear a play, and you're like, I have six rings, six Lombardi trophies, doing it a different way, but okay, I'll trust you. Now, when it goes well, there's no problem. It's just when it doesn't go well, that's when the issues resume. And I just think that right now, Bruce Arians has a system that Tom Brady's been allowed to thrive in. He's fourth in passing touchdowns, ninth in passing yards per game, but everyone acts like the sky is falling when you're talking about what he's doing in New England versus what he's doing in Tampa. So I don't think either one's at fault. It's just a buy-in. It's a trust chemistry issue. They need more reps. They need more success. And they just need a little more time. But hopefully they will get it all fixed. A few games remaining with the bye week, and then go into the playoffs hot like they need to be.
Marcellus, I've got a lob ball for you. It's an easy answer to the question. It's a fill-in-the-blank. And we'll see if me and you are on the same wavelength. After the performances yesterday, I think one player in the NFL put a stranglehold on the MVP. It's an obvious answer. Can you fill in the blank to see if you're on the same page who that player is?
That player is Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's not, but continue. Yeah. Go ahead, Marcellus.
Go ahead, Marcellus. Answer the question, please.
It's as much as if Usain Bolt is running against anyone else. There's someone else on the track, but no one else really in contention. I think that's what's happening here. Look, Aaron Rodgers is still in contention. Tom Brady, outside chance. You can try to reach for other positions. They never will win over a quarterback. Yeah, it's Patrick Mahomes' MVP, and what he's been able to do in terms of the win-loss record is going to be greater than his MVP season. His individual stats won't be, but if you're creating a dynasty right before our eyes and you're playing at that level, I don't see how they give it to anybody else.
Yeah, see, this is where I would disagree with you on that.
What a great answer, Marcellus.
It's a spectacular answer. Mahomes, what am I going to say about Mahomes that everyone on earth has not already said?
And it's okay if you just say he's the MVP.
He's spectacular. What I said was I think where he might get bit is with the narrative game, because you're right. I mean, Mahomes, he's going to win a million ball games. He's the best player in the game, the most talented player in the game. But you look at his stats. Okay, 68.8% completion rating. That's off the charts good. Aaron Rodgers, 68.5%. Rodgers has thrown 33 touchdowns. Mahomes, 30. Their QB rating, 86.2 for Mahomes, and Rodgers is 85.2. Their rating overall, 115.5 for Mahomes, 117.6 for Rodgers. It is close statistically, very close. Then when you throw on, he's 37. He had to watch on draft night his team draft his successor, didn't get any weapons, didn't trade for Will Fuller, doesn't have this, that, or the other, and he's going to run off 12 wins himself. I think Rodgers is going to have a very narrative, compelling case that might push him past Mahomes. That's what I'm saying. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I don't argue that, because all of those things are something that you can really use as a premise to put him past Patrick Mahomes. There's also just voter fatigue. For some reason, these voters like this to be a traveling trophy. They wanted to hit as many different players as possible. So there is a voter fatigue. Hey, we just gave it to Mahomes. Did he play better this year than he did when we gave it to him 2 years ago? No, he didn't. So why are we giving it to him again? Who else has a great story? Who's compelling? And everything you said about Aaron Rodgers is absolutely correct. I just think that right now, the ceiling in terms of what Patrick Mahomes is doing, not only for himself, but the translation of that to team, is where he's going to get the trump card over Aaron Rodgers. I don't think Aaron Rodgers' team will look as good the record won't look as good as what Patrick Mahomes has been able to do. That translation right there, I think, gives them the nod.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
It's a great answer. I'm gonna pivot over to how would you feel if you're playing and you've got no quarterback? So they say, hey, we're gonna pull off the practice squad a wide receiver because he played a little quarterback in college ball. How would you feel as a player if you were on Denver?
Oh my goodness, to mess with your money, mess with your performance like that, insane. Like, ooh. I mean, you're not supposed to turn on your teammates, but we've seen it happen before, and we've seen teammates have fights before, and this will certainly be fighting terms in terms of all three of the quarterbacks compromising the entire team to the point where they don't have a capable comp out there at the position. That's sad, man. Oh, I'm not even an active player, but just to think that we're doomed, we're damned before we even get out there. Oh, that will make my blood boil. But, you know, depending on what position, that could be fuel and motivation. But as we saw in that game yesterday, the Saints haven't allowed a touchdown in the two games Drew Brees has been out, in part because Taysom Hill's running the ball. And quarterback or not, no matter who their opponent's been, they haven't had much good success against this defense that the Saints have pulled out. But that is sad. Not all these people on this planet – in 32 teams, and you can't find capable quarterbacks that can stay healthy through this situation. Pretty damning right there.
Yeah, that was crazy to see, and not a surprising outcome. And I would say not a surprising outcome last night to get back to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers laying a beating on the Bears. And Trubisky looked like he did prior to being benched and prior to being injured. But Matt Nagy, the head coach of the Bears, came out and just laid into his team and called it an embarrassing effort and called them out to show some pride.
They're not good.
No, they're not. They're not any good, and they know Matt Nagy's a dead man walking. I mean, you've been in these rooms before. All three of you guys have. Marcellus, do you think this is actually going to inspire the Bears, or are they just going to tune out Nagy and say, "Dude, we got like four or five games left, and then we never have to see you again"?
Yeah, I think this is, like you said, walking paper for Matt Nagy for many reasons. One, I thought it was a premature decision to bench Trubisky the first time. He was 2-0 as a starter. The third game they were losing against Atlanta. He benches them, they win. But then you saw the offensive statistics from that point forward. They weren't a better team. They weren't a better offense without Mitch Trubisky. He was your future, and you leveraged and mortgaged that for the present. And then you found out that fizzled out. All of that is on your resume, Matt Nagy. All of that is under your watch, on your clock. So that's going to come back to haunt you. And now you're trying to jumpstart the team again. Oh, the guy bitched like 5-6 weeks ago. He's actually your leader. And everybody's like, yeah, right. That dude's not our leader. And one thing I love about sports, especially football, it doesn't matter how nice you are. It doesn't matter how nice you talk about the game and how much you've learned and how much you say, okay, I've really understood what I've went through and now – everything's different. I'm going to turn the page. Football doesn't give a damn. It's so funny. I play with guys that were great citizens and sorry football players. And then I play with guys who just didn't know which way was up in their real life and just didn't care about people, didn't even study hard. But, boy, when that ball was kicked, they knew how to act on that football field. And it's just the ultimate equalizer, man. It's just funny that Matt Nagy, all these press conferences, Mitch Trubisky can say all the right things. Who cares? It's about what you do on that field between the whites for 3 hours. And right now, they're not doing enough.
No, they're not. And I don't expect that they will the rest of the way. Great stuff as always. We'll do it again next week. Thank you, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care, brother.
Marcellus Wiley from FS1, longtime NFLer.
You know who else looked like an absolute donkey yesterday? A couple things from yesterday. The Jags tanking, clearly tanking, but yet they had to fire their general manager yesterday. I found that bizarre.
Oh,
trading
yeah.
away all their best players. It's like they're tanking for Lawrence, but they fired their GM. It's like, what were you expecting from them? And the other thing is Gase just looked like a complete turkey after that game.
Unbelievable.
He was being questioned, and they were saying, it looked like on the sidelines, that you weren't calling plays, but were you? But you weren't doing anything. And he's like, oh, we have a system down where if it's like third, it was bizarre to watch.
Oh, it's so bizarre. He's calling the plays, and everyone knows it, and he doesn't want to admit it.
Yeah, I know. And he's like, no, we have it all down pat. I'm like, you sound like the dumbest human being on earth right now. And you talk about a dead man walking. Why is he still there?
It's so rare to see a coach get fired. That said,
Matt Patricia
did. Did
you see the specific moment I'm talking about?
Like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
He looks so stupid where they were like, well, we saw the other guy. Yeah, we saw the other guy in the sidelines with his hands in his pocket. He wasn't doing anything. So he couldn't have been calling plays. He's like, oh, yeah, we have a system.
Well, then he was like, well, I call third down plays. What the hell does that mean?
I had to throw the remote at the TV and say, you are ridiculous.
No, Gase is ridiculous. And Gase is gone. Nagy's gone to Chicago. Ryan Pace, I think the GM, has to be gone. He's the one that – he went all in on Trubisky. He went all in on Trubisky, traded up in the draft in 17 to get him. We all know who went after that, right? Like, we know Mahomes went 10th and Watson went 12th. And Christian McCaffrey went 8th. Like, for you didn't take a quarterback. At least take the most electric running back in the game. They didn't take him. But Matt Patricia, this says something about the Lions, that they fired their coach over the weekend, which they never happens in the NFL. Very rarely does a coach get fired. Remember last year, a couple years ago, when the Packers fired McCarthy and people were shocked, and it was like week 16, because it just never happens that way. The Lions, when it happens to them, it's like, yeah, I guess so. I could see that. Like, that's how bad they are. That's how inept they are. That's how big of a disaster they constantly are. I feel for Lion fan. We don't bring them up enough. We talk about the Jets. We talk about the Jags. We talk about the Browns. The Lions have been around forever, and they don't win anything. No. Nothing. And they got suckered into a Belichick sycophant, and they picked up Patricia, and look how it worked out. It worked out horribly.
Yeah.
And they fire him, and he's gone, and the Lions are back to square one.
I don't know what your thoughts are, but some of these organizations, whether it be the Jets, the Jaguars, the Bears, like, doesn't somebody just go out and throw $30 million a year at Peyton Manning and say, do you want to be the president of this team and try to fix it?
Might be worth a shot.
It would be worth a shot. Like, all these other donkeys, they keep recycling. It doesn't work. Go get a brilliant football mind. I mean, John Elway, as the president of the Denver Broncos, he won a championship there, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He worked.
Yeah, yeah. Peyton Manning was a quarterback. It's like, just at least give somebody who knows the ins and outs of football. Obviously, the great mind sometimes doesn't translate into great behind the scenes, but just he knows the ins and outs of football players, tendencies, travel, everything involved in the organization. Give him a shot to run it. Give him a shot.
It gives you credibility, too.
Yeah, and
that
might be
what it is.
Like, for a team like the Lions, it'll just be some kind of a PR sweetheart for you.
It would
be so bad for so long. But then when Peyton Manning starts thinking the joint out in Detroit, then it'll just all hell will break loose.
Right, and he's not taking that job. He's not going to Detroit. You know, like, he's waiting. We'll pick this up in the next hour. I'm with you, though. But it also, sometimes there's a layer above that, the owner, and a layer below it, the quarterback. If you don't solve those, you know, whoever's in the middle is...
doesn't matter.
Yeah, paddling upstream. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
All have a similar tight feeling about Patrice Mahomes.
Yeah, sheep. That's what I call them, sheeple. Everyone just following the leader. Everyone
but
says
the one
it's
point
Mahomes.
That it's almost like he was saying everything I said word for word. It's like you get bored of saying Mahomes the MVP, and you just start sniffing around for something else.
That's right, which has happened. History would suggest there's a very
sniffing
good chance that is what is going to happen.
Sniffing around will get you in trouble.
Sniffing around can get you in a lot of trouble, but it also might lead you to the promised land in terms of a rock-solid prediction. Yeah,
it can. It can lead you to great places, but it can get you in trouble.
It can. Talk to Steph Curry about sniffing around playing golf on TV. Did you see his game just getting carved? We'll tell you more about that from the match on Friday. Hour 3 up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
you know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FISRA License 12616.
This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.